Welcome to another episode of our Heritage at the Heart podcasts. And today we are in the lovely town of Castle Blaney in County Monaghan. I'm Shirley Clerk, the Heritage Officer with Monaghan County Council. And today we're going to discuss market houses, and we're looking right at the Castle Blaney example. And I'm here with some very expert, knowledgeable types of people, even though they claim that they're just know-it-alls, but I disagree. And they're all going to introduce themselves now.
Larry McDermott from the Clare Historical Society.
Mark Brady, Mucknow Heritage Society.
Kevin Mulligan, Architectural Historian.
So maybe we'll start with Kevin then, just for a bit of an overview about why market houses were built and what were their functions in towns in the first place.
Well, essentially, the development of market towns from the 17th century was the sort of economic central function of the town. So market houses evolved as markets developed. And in Castle Blaney, for example, here, this building is the second market house on this site. Market rights were granted to Edward Blaney in the early 17th century. So many other market towns in the county would reflect the same sort of granting of rights. The development of the town, the urban centre, and the market house very often at the centre of that as a prominent building.
And within, its walls, what sort of activity was taking place? It was trade mostly, wasn't it? It was sort of selling and buying goods. Maybe, I don't know, were there taxes being paid inside here to different landlords? Or, what was the kind of function, the commercial function?
Well, most towns would have had a single owner. So the Blaneys were prominent in both Monaghan and in Castle Blaney. And that relates to the 17th century plantation. And Castle Blaney was an important point between Monaghan and Newry. And obviously to maintain control over the country, as it were, Blaney was given rights. So as seneschal of Monaghan, he had certain rights and built a castle in Monaghan town, and did so in Blaney as well. So in terms of establishing peace in the 17th century, a good, stable economy was vital for that. So the market would have reflected the activities within the wider hinterland, the agricultural activity, and the markets in Castle Blaney would have reflected that. So there were three markets during the week. Two of them were for corn and the other for general commodities. So everyone from the hinterland would have come in to the town for those market days and on the monthly fair days as well.
And Martin, you're from Castle Blaney, aren't you? You know a lot about the specific comings and goings, shall we say, of Castle Blaney and this building.
Yeah. Well, Edward Blaney was granted the license to hold markets in the town in 1613, and we celebrated it back in 2013 with a recreation of a fair day. Not as it was in 1613, but around the 1900s, which were easier to get some idea of what it was. The castle, the entrance is behind us here, and to make the market house feasible and the square feasible, all the houses here were pushed back to give a square effect, even though it's triangular. We call it the market square. And the market house, the original market house, was built in 1790, and it's modelled on the market house in Ballinahinch in County Down, which were built by the sort of the same family, because Andrew Thomas Blaney's mother was Callaghan, and they owned about 5,000 acres around Ballinahinch in County Down, and they used the same model for that. And we know that from a drawing by Victor de Noye, who worked on the ordnance survey here in 1835, and he drew pictures of the market house from that time when he stayed in what is now the Hope Arms, or the King's Arms, over the road.
And that was the first market house, or that
this? That was the first market house.
Yeah.
And the Blaneys sold the estate in the 1850s to the Hope family, Henry Thomas Hope, who was the Hopes were one of the wealthiest families in the world at the time.
And the Hope Diamond.
The Hope Diamond,
so
is
just
a bit
that's probably
that.
Enough to say how yeah, wealthy they were.
And the other thing that the Hopes were involved with was the Louisiana Purchase. When the United States borrowed $15 million to buy about 53 million acres of land from the French, Napoleon needed money to fight the wars he was fighting against England, and the Hopes and Barclays Bank, who have since gone as well, provided the $15 million in 1803 for that purchase.
So that same family built this market house.
They extended the market house, and they did.
Yeah.
We think that the original market house is still in the middle of it, and he extended it to provide a courthouse and meeting rooms on each side. And it was designed in a, because his wife was French, Henry Thomas Hope's wife was French, she wanted the castle reinvented as a French chateau. And when they built or extended the market house, it was designed in a style of a French Hotel de Ville. And that's why all the embellishments are on it and that.
All right. When we're looking here at it, just to describe it for people who maybe don't know Castle Blaney, you know, the courthouse or the market house and courthouse combination, shall we say, is sitting in this triangular space in the centre of Castle Blaney on a very prominent steep incline. So it's sort of double heighted. On one, on the lower end, there are is an arcade of what would have been open, an open area, and then two stories above. And it's facing directly at the main entrance gates to the Hope Estate or the Castle Blaney Estate. So it forms a really nice, you know, sort of a streetscape, an open public area within the town, a very historic area. And Kevin, wouldn't you agree that the setting here is very important as well?
Yeah, it's very important because it's at an intersection of all the major approaches to the town. So coming down the main street, West Street, you get the building very attractively angled, so it has a picturesque effect. And the existence of the market house here also mirrors in a way the existence of the market house in Monaghan Town, which was built around the same time as the original one here, 1790s. And of course, they, as prominent buildings in prominent locations, they tend to reflect that in the design as well. So architecturally, they're more sophisticated. So if you think of the market house in Monaghan, so formal details like pediments, the round headed arches that form an arcade that reflect the use, of course, of the building. And there is obviously in the location that sort of openness and reflecting the function and a variety of functions. So where this was fundamentally a marketplace, many of the market houses in Monaghan and throughout the country would have accommodated ancillary uses. So assembly rooms or meeting rooms on the first floor. And in fact, this one, when rebuilt in the 1850s, actually combined about seven functions in one structure. And that gives an idea of how important these were, how integral they were to the social fabric and economics of the town.
It's interesting to think about all that multifunctional uses of the spaces, isn't it? I mean, there's also market houses in Ballybay, of course. Carrickmacross, Larry, yes, is a very prominent example as well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Kevin mentioned the proprietors. In Carrickmacross, there were two proprietors, Lord Bath and the Shirleys. And Carrickmacross, over the years, had three market houses. One at the south end of the street was replaced in 1730 by a market house in the centre of the town. But by the 1850s, this market house was no longer fit for purpose, so the two proprietors agreed to develop a new structure at the north end, and they built two U-shaped structures with enclosed courtyard opening out onto the street. The Bath one on the east side was built of stone and beautiful dressed stone, whereas the Shirley side was, to put it mildly, not as substantial. Going back to markets, however, if one should think that they were just a thing brought in by the planters, no. There is strong evidence to show that there were markets in the Carrickmacross area in the time of the McMahons. And there's a document from the Shirley papers existing that gives the rules and regulations laid down for the conduct of the market. The proprietors saw this as a way of raising income, and there were tolls and levies. And the little toll house, which still survives in Carrickmacross, is where the tolls were collected.
Nothing much changes then,
nothing changes,
actually,
no.
Larry, does it? There's
no
little toll boxes somewhere on many roads nowadays, isn't there? The same thing,
yeah,
really.
And
yeah,
just when we are on the subject, we have a word in the English language called to forestall.
To forestall.
And it owes its origin to the markets. There was one of the rules drawn up by the McMahons was that you were not allowed to sell or buy within 3 miles of the town. On the market. If you did so, you were a forestaller. You sold
before the stall.
And that carried a heavy fine. You'd end up in court.
Okay, so any commercial activity had to be taken place within the area where which you could pay an
yes,
additional tax or levy
and
on it.
Shrewd men that yeah, they were, not only could you could buy in the market, but you couldn't sell the same day again. You had to come back again to another market if you wanted to resell the goods you bought.
Those are brilliant. I love that now. Forestalling. That's fantastic. And so this building now at the moment, Martin, I suppose we'd call it in a deteriorated state. Now, obviously, the County Council who own it have done some, temporary works, temporary propping works to the windows and things like that to try and hold it up for the time being. But yourself, now you'd have a keen interest in seeing this building restored, wouldn't you?
Restored, yeah, but fit for purpose now it is. And we had some plans for ourselves with it because we were afraid, the local populace in the town were very afraid that the expedient solution for the County Council would have been to demolish it, which they would have had in their heads. But when Big Tom's statue, was placed down there, and there were about 3,500 or 4,000 people here on that day when Michael D. Higgins unveiled it, they had to rethink at that stage. And we had a plan, because Castleblaney is noted for its musical tradition. We had a plan to reinstate the market house to appreciate that, but not just of Castleblaney or Monaghan, but the long history of music and culture that iron has exported around the world. But that's a story for a different day, I think. So it is.
You're hoping to put that elsewhere now, well, aren't you? But
yeah, well, the county council came on board with plans to reinstate the market house. They have a concept plan which they unveiled here, and they are progressing that on the town and village renewal scheme. So they're hoping that in about 2 years they will have the funding.
Yeah.
So hopefully within 2 years we'll see it restored to somewhat of its former glory. So, you know, the market house here in the town is loved and cherished and valued by the people of the town. So that's our future, we hope.
Kind of like heritage-led regeneration, I suppose. And Kevin, you'd be a big proponent of this, wouldn't you? Like heritage-led regeneration, using our historic assets, trying to use them so that we can have a sustainable life, more people living in this area, in and around the market house, of course, close to the park itself. But the reuse of these historic assets, it's much more sustainable from an energy point of view, from a materials point of view, than building new, even aside from the historic value. But Kevin, your views now on this would be similar to my own, I'm sure.
Yeah, historic buildings have so much embodied energy, and that's something that people are becoming very aware of. But embodied in the building as well as all of the history and heritage, and the connection to the past that is so important, the sense of place that exists anywhere relies so much on its buildings. You know, the very fabric is basically what defines it. And what's very important and demonstrated in this building is that if you abandon a building or take it out of use, it becomes so difficult to actually retain it, repair it. Keeping it in use as close to possible to its original use is the best for historic buildings, the best sort of guarantee of its survival. And historic buildings tend to create problems more in the minds of people who have responsibility, when in fact they're eminently adaptable and reusable, and they'll always have very strong advocates to support them. And I think this building, having been abandoned effectively 20 years ago, has fallen into a state where it requires huge investment, whereas if it was adapted and kept in constant use, the cost wouldn't have been anywhere near the same, and the building would obviously be valued and supported constantly. So keeping historic buildings in use is vital, and not doing that is demonstrating the condition of the building now. So hopefully it'll find a future and will remain at the heart of Castleblaney.
Martin mentioned Castleblaney's link with music, and it would be remiss of me not to mention Patrick Kavanagh and his links to the markets. The Green Fool contains an account of his experience in the market and fairs in Carrickmacross. His beautiful poem, In Memory of My Mother, also recalls visits to Carrick Market. I can see us meeting at the end of a town on a fair day by accident, after the bargains are all made and we can walk together through the shops and stalls and markets, free in the oriental streets of thought.
Well, I just think that's the most wonderful note to finish up this episode about market houses, I have to say. And we won't forestall any further. And I'd like to thank all our participants today in today's episodes about market houses. Thank you. The Heritage at the Heart podcast series is supported by the Heritage Council and Monaghan County Council.